Hello, book lovers. I'm Rachel Barenbaum. You're listening to Check This Out from New Hampshire Public Radio and the Penn Faulkner Foundation. I write novels, and on this show, I get to do one of my favorite things in the world, talk to other writers about their brand new books. And if you're like me, and you get tired of seeing the same titles on every bestseller list, you're in the right place, because on this show, you'll hear from authors who aren't famous yet, but probably will be. Remember, you heard them here first. Last season, I spoke with Jemima Way about her book, The Original Daughter. That book was recently nominated for the 2026 Dublin Literary Award. Congratulations, Jemima! You can catch that conversation on NHPR, on the website, or wherever you get your podcasts. Today on my show, Eliana Ramage and her debut, To the Moon and Back. This novel is so good. It's about family, ambition, and belonging, and I loved it. It is about one young woman's obsessive quest to become the first Cherokee astronaut. Eliana, congratulations on your debut. I'm really excited to have you on the show today. Welcome.
Thank you so much. It's just wonderful to be here.
So your book actually starts off in 1987. It goes through basically a whole lifetime for your main character, Steph, and takes us through a lot of years. But we start when she is 6 years old in this very compelling scene. Can you read for us to start us off and introduce us to the novel?
Sure.
I just want to dig right in so people can get the flavor for your writing and the story that we're about to be thrown into.
Okay, let's see. Removal, June 1987. I imagine her terrified. Our mother, two children in the back seat. She drove like a woman followed, even after we left him at the foot of that tall hill. There was blood there, back in Texas, and tiny shards of glass still covered my sister. She sat beside me, her small body glittering in passing lights, the brights of cars, the moon. I remember our mother pulling off the highway into dark towns, buying biscuits at the drive-thru with small bills and a rubber band pulled from under the driver's seat. Kayla slept, and I ate three biscuits, hers and mine, and our mother's too. Our mother, who cried silently behind the steering wheel from Dallas to Plano to Sherman to McAllister, I practiced reading highway signs. Our mother helped me sound them out, until she didn't. I was in my school clothes. My underwear said Tuesday in cursive. A long time later, we passed a blue sign with a buffalo skin shield and eagle feathers and little brown crosses. Oklahoma. Our mother corrected me. Oh, not ah, but she was talking again. She was alive. She pulled off the highway at the first rest stop past the blue sign, and she took one giant breath, in and out, with her eyes closed. I copied her. Kayla wiggled against the straps in her booster seat. She started to sing, happily and to herself. I would grow up with stories in Tahlequah, though never the kind I asked for. There were no stories for what had happened, for why we'd left Texas, and when we might return.
Such a powerful opening. I almost never ask authors to just dive in and read like that. I know it's a little different, but I wanted to start with that because it is such a powerful opening, and it really sets up the book for Steph, your main character, wanting to escape, right? From the very first page, whether she wants to escape to the moon or she wants to escape Texas, she is escaping. So Eliana, in your words, what is To the Moon and Back about?
I think you said it so well before. It is, I think the driving force of it is one young woman's quest to become the first Cherokee astronaut. But even if that's the engine that keeps everything running, what it's really about is her relationships as she's coming of age with her mother, her sister, her girlfriend, how that sort of marriage of love and ambition, what happens when we bring those together with the people that we love.
And so we see Steph really, her love and her relationships grow throughout the book, and always driven by this desire to become an astronaut. Why an astronaut, right? Why is that at the core?
Why an astronaut for her or why an astronaut for me? I think those are two different things.
I love it. I want the answer for both.
For her, I think that's a central question that the novel, that she's trying to understand over the course of her life. Page one, an astronaut because escape. Something terrible has happened. And instead of looking forward at Oklahoma, at the place that her family is going to try to find sort of safe haven, she's looking up and she's thinking about how can I get away from this world, from this life, and from this feeling primarily of alienation. And, you know, is that always going to be, should we build our lives on getting away from something? That's something that she needs to figure out. For me, though, I'm not a scientist. I'm someone who really admires scientists and their contribution to humanity. But the spark of this happened when I was 18. So this is the reason why I used to listen to New Hampshire Public Radio. I went to Dartmouth College. And a big, big part of what brought me there was the school's commitment to Native education. So I wanted to be at Dartmouth as this place where I could be living in a house and hanging out and learning and studying and just like being part of this larger Native community, different from where I grew up in Nashville, where that meant like specifically Cherokees, specifically people who related to me, specifically like one or two other people in my high school. So that was an incredible experience to show up at 18 and be part of this larger community where we were all from different tribal nations, but a larger community. And that larger community still was interested in similar things. We were coming from similar places even when we weren't. So one day we were in a room at college, we're all talking, and a lot of our stories that day were focused on the past and were focused on the pain and the loss of the past. And there was even this feeling in the room of like comparing ourselves to what we might have been or how far we felt from this sort of image we had of Native identity set in a past timeline. And then one person in the room, Winter Fox Frank, he said, if one of you were to become an astronaut, then that too would be part of the story of your people. So that day, that felt like permission for like wonder, for optimism, for like possibility, for thinking about like myself and someday my children as like a continuation of something, as part of a nation that has always changed. That feels very natural to me now, but at 18, I really needed someone to tell me that.
Wow, that's a really powerful story, right? That's the continuation of your people, of the history.
And of course, I don't want to be an astronaut, but to immediately have this like really specific image, like gifted from someone else who is from a different tribal nation, but sort of wrestling with those same ideas about how to be a Native person, you know, a new adult after leaving Dartmouth, like that was really, really special.
Wow. So your main character, Steph, I think you really have rolled that into her. And we met her, you read the opening page, we met her when she was just a little kid escaping from Texas. And the question that really drives her throughout the book is sort of, to me, seemed to be, where do I belong? And she always wants to belong in space.
Yes.
But I don't know that that's really belonging anywhere, right? Because what is space, right?
So it's just like not here.
Right, yeah. Right. So she wants to be anywhere but here. And she's always fighting to go there. And you start her off with on the reservation. She's with her mom and her sister, and they go to this summer camp. And she wants to be in space camp, right?
Yes.
But her mom says, we're going to make it. Well, you tell us about this summer camp that she ends up in.
Okay, so this is like a ridiculous imaginary version of a summer, like a real thing. There is a summer camp that's like Cherokee Culture Camp. And, you know, you can go and you can learn how to play stickball, or you can learn about the Cherokee language. There's all these incredible things you can learn. But Steph would not have been interested in that real program. This is somebody who, again, like, only wants space. Space camp costs $1,000. Her mom hangs up and is like, we just can't do that. Cherokee Culture Camp is free. So her mom and her mom's boyfriend get together. They kind of take over Cherokee Culture Camp and they turn it into what they call Space/Culture Camp. And the whole camp is for her daughter. It's like, we're gonna talk about what an eclipse is, but we're gonna talk about it using like the traditional Cherokee story of what an eclipse is. We're gonna paint the planets, but we're gonna paint them like on the cuffs of moccasins. So I think of this as, of course, like an incredible, incredible gesture of love for a mom who's really struggling and working very, very long hours at her job. Steph is like, this isn't the real space camp, and it's not going to help me get into Exeter.
As any kid would, right? Any kid would be like, this is ridiculous, mom. I don't care that you're killing yourself to do it. I hate it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And that's part of the fun of the book, I think, because I was writing it during, you know, from 18 to like now I'm 34. So over those years, it's not that I was writing it with the attitude of like, you know, specifically Steph or specifically of like a 14-year-old, 15-year-old in that position. But I did notice that it felt freeing to not be stuck in the perspective of someone who's that age or that phase of life. Just getting to follow her through different stages was nice.
Yeah. But so at this stage, when we see her at this space/culture camp, right, she's obsessed with this idea that she has to go to Exeter, which is a very exclusive boarding school in New Hampshire. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that is her way to get to Harvard. And then that's her way to become an astronaut. So she has this whole plan. And right. And she's very driven. But she hasn't received her acceptance yet to Exeter. And you know, at the same time, her mom, her mom's boyfriend, and her sister are trying to learn and talk about being Cherokee. Yeah. And learn the language, right? And so there's this big juxtaposition of, like, does Steph want to learn about being Cherokee, or does she only want to be an astronaut? Like, I felt this push-pull, and these characters were really on different sides. Can you talk about that?
Yes. I mean, that's a huge part of the book, is how these two daughters, even if we set aside the mom and the boyfriend who have a different tension between them in terms of Cherokee culture, but just the two daughters, they, in that car scene from before, they arrive in this new home at the same time, that same night. And one of the wonderful things about writing about siblings is they have those same early childhood experiences. They have the same kind of ingredients. And then we all just interpret our own stories in different ways and take them in different directions. So Kayla grows up to become an artist / activist / indigenous social media influencer. And she's just as ambitious as Steph is. But they express it in different ways, in opposing ways. Their values conflict with one another. And throughout the book, it's kind of like this thread between them. Like, is it going to break? What does it mean to care about future generations and have two people who are both kind of making all their decisions based off of their eventual descendants, but to disagree on what exactly would be the best outcome for those people?
Yeah. So, I mean, Kayla, the younger sister, like, her entire identity and being is bound up in being Cherokee and what that means to her. And Steph, it's sort of like she asks questions like, could there be life on a binary star? Which to me was sort of like, is there life without being Cherokee? like just Cherokee, right? Like, what else could I be? Whereas for Kayla, like, she's happy with that. And that tension really, I thought, fueled big parts of the book.
And in practical ways, part of why there's a lot of conversation in this book about, for example, like terraforming other planets is Steph feels like, in terms of our responsibility to future generations, she knows what it is to feel unsafe. So if, you know, she thinks, God forbid, something happens to this planet, whether, of course, that's like a slow global warming situation or, you know, a catastrophe, she feels like if she can do her part to get some of us to, let's say, Mars, then we will continue just at all as a species. I think her sister does a good job of asking questions like, sure, okay, I hear you. And who do we think is going to make it to that other planet? What are we going to leave behind? And if we're effectively giving up on this planet right now, then like, do you really see no value in the work of many, many, many generations of Native people in holding on to things like, for example, the Cherokee language, which is endangered and, you know, so there's just such powerful work happening like right now in real life to maintain that.
If you're just joining us, I'm Rachel Barenbaum. You're listening to Check This Out from New Hampshire Public Radio. And my guest today is Eliana Ramage. And we are talking about her brand new debut, To the Moon and Back. And Eliana, you just brought up the Cherokee language, which is like my next question.
Perfect.
On my script. Perfect. Like you could read the script. Because this is a huge part of this first summer when we see the girls and throughout, right? Can you speak Cherokee? And, you know, I think questions of, is it, you know, all, how do you speak it? How do you learn the language? And I wanted to just ask you about that. Like, how do you learn Cherokee? And if you could talk about, right, there's an amazing story about turning it into a written language. Let's talk about the language, Cherokee.
I love talking about the language. It's something I've been interested in. Many, many, many Cherokee people have been interested in whether or not we speak it. I don't speak it. From childhood, I think a lot of us, even like my mom and her sisters, like have memories as, again, non-Cherokee speakers, of being a kid. And because we have like this written syllabary, you know, trying to like figure out how to write out like whatever you can using that syllabary. And this is, again, from the perspective of someone who doesn't speak it. So what started as like a fascination as a child, I think the older I got, the more I realized, especially around high school, college age, the more I understood like this is more than like, you know, a beautiful, like fun syllabary to write with. Like this is a language that needs people to care about it and to use it, to interact with it in whatever way they can. Learning that larger story of not only like how few first language speakers there are today, but what efforts the nation is taking up to ensure its continuation, that turned it into more of an active thing for me. And the story of when it really was most active in my life was right after college. So I finished I graduated in 2013. And there were a few years where actually one of my closest friends I met at Dartmouth, who's also Cherokee, Greg. So he and I started a weekly Zoom where we would study the language together. We would give each other homework. We would meet the next week and correct our homework. That's what we were doing on Zoom. Both of us like removed geographically from where a lot of that language work is happening. And then meanwhile, in Cherokee Nation, today there's an immersion school, there's an immersion preschool for the youngest learners, there's a master apprentice program for adults to go and study the language, sort of teamed up with elders. There are many, many, many programs that are all working towards that same goal of continuing the language.
Wow. I didn't know about all that. That's pretty amazing. Because, you know, you mentioned that there's a lot of work going on to preserve the language. And that's what's happening in the trenches.
That's just some of it. There's an app that was recently developed. This is happening. It's not at all solely a Cherokee story. All around the country, we have many, many tribes that are investing money, that are investing volunteers and resources, just doing everything they can in this generation. Like, this is a really crucial time for people to be thinking about their heritage languages.
So we don't lose it.
So we don't lose them, exactly, any of them.
Yes, yes. And I think this brings us back to the book, your debut, To the Moon and Back, where your main character wants to be an astronaut. Steph wants to be an astronaut. But always underneath every page is this question of, where does she come from? Her sister's asking it all the time. But I felt like that was also in the background for Steph. And one of my favorite lines in the book is when she is actually talking to some of her friends and they're saying, well, you know, Cherokee, you must be a warrior. And she says, well, I didn't feel like I actually came from warriors. I felt like I came from exhausted women. And I want to talk about that word and that passage, because I have it like dog-eared, underlined, circled, like bright red in my copy. I feel like I came from exhausted women, because the matriarchy is a huge theme in this book. Let's talk about that idea.
Oh, definitely. And this question of what does the matriarchy look like? It's something that each character understands, I think, in a different way. Common theme in this book. I didn't want to have one Cherokee character. I wanted to have these four Cherokee women who are thinking about their responsibility to the past and the future in different ways. So Hannah, Steph and Kayla's mother, it was so important to me that she is not born in Oklahoma. In the first chapter, we see her returning to the place where she, as a child, spent one summer visiting her grandmother, because this idea of coming home and that home being complicated by removal, by it being not being, you know, initially Cherokee homelands, and it being complicated by how many Cherokee people don't live in Oklahoma today, in northeastern Oklahoma, including myself. So I wanted Hannah to think of her responsibility as a mother to be, as a Cherokee mother, to be, okay, I have strayed far from where I came from. Bad things happened. And now all I need to give my daughters, like the one thing that will keep them safe, is this gift of reconnection, this gift of a homecoming to a place where they will feel like they belong. That's what Hannah is all about. And some of what's wrapped up in that is the way Hannah thinks about her Cherokee ancestry, the stories that she chooses to pass on, to not pass on, Hannah's understanding of what it means to be Cherokee, which I think is a little bit too dependent on this like idea of the purity of the past and, you know, all of the good ancestors that brought us to this place.
And she talks about the exhausted women, right? That led them there.
Absolutely. Yes. And then with Kayla, I think she's exhausted in a very, very different way, because she's kind of the opposite of the mom. Instead of being past focused, she's very much future focused. She's built her life kind of around Instagram at one point. And she just has to show up over and over again as a certain kind of Native woman because she's so visible. She's chosen to make herself so visible. She becomes a mother. She just has all the weight of all of her ancestors and everything on her, and she has to translate that to a contemporary audience that expects to see a certain image, a certain clothing, certain behaviors, just like a very particular version of indigenous identity that doesn't leave much room for messiness.
Right. She's curating.
Yes, absolutely. Great word.
She curates her Insta life to make it look like she's only wearing certain clothing and only, you know, eating certain foods or doing whatever, so that she looks the way people expect her to look, which is, of course, not actually how she always is.
Yes. Or, you know, sometimes it is how she is. Like, she really is, let's say, like, you know, harvesting indigenous foods and thinking about food sovereignty. Like she is doing these things, but I think she's holding herself to such a standard, and she's thinking so much about how she's performing it that she doesn't leave herself much room to explore or to like fall short, if that's how she would see it.
Yeah. So there is another Cherokee woman, and we're going to get to that in just a moment. I'm Rachel Barenbaum. You're listening to Check This Out from New Hampshire Public Radio. If you or your book club have read any of the novels featured on the show, send us a note or a voice message and let us know what you think. You can use the email address books@nhpr.org. My guest today is Eliana Ramage, and we are talking about her brand new novel, To the Moon and Back. I loved this book so much. There are several women at the core. I guess you could say four. We had mentioned four, but there are many. I want to move on to Della. Tell us about Della.
She's my favorite.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I love her so much. I think she's the easiest to love in a book of some pretty complicated people. She is a Cherokee woman who also comes to Hollis College, where she meets Steph. So they're both freshmen together, and they're both members of a Native student organization, which is very much inspired by just like not the specifics of my own experience at Dartmouth, but definitely like the love I feel for that kind of space. Della was adopted out as a child. What that means is that there was a white couple that adopted her using a private adoption agency that chose to ignore the Indian Child Welfare Act. Very, very important federal law meant to protect Native children, keep them with their communities. Because that law was ignored, Della ends up at the center of a years-long custody battle. She moves from one family to the other. She ends up growing up away from her biological father with this couple that is then kind of afraid of all things Cherokee. So when we meet her, she is coming to terms with two different parts of her story that she didn't really get to tell before. She is realizing that she's gay, and she's also realizing that this like time away from home in college with this Native student organization, it's her first opportunity in life to be with other Native people, to learn more about what it means to be Cherokee, and to try to like write that part of her story for herself. I think so many of the women in this book are wrestling with that question of like, how can I figure out my story and how can I share my story? With Della, one of the things that's so hard and so complicated about it is that she was made famous through this custody battle that made its way all the way to the Supreme Court. So what does it mean when you're trying to, you know, come of age, figure out your story, share your story, and at the same time you realize everybody thinks that they already know that story?
Is she based on a real life situation?
She's not based on any real people who have been through that. She's definitely based on the really, really hard idea of like what happens when the Indian Child Welfare Act is challenged, or when in individual cases it's ignored. In my teens and my 20s, I kept seeing it happen in big ways and in small ways. And so this working on this novel, trying to understand this character, sort of gave me a space to explore what it might mean for an adult in that situation and what it does mean. Like, there are many, many adults I've met, some of whom I've gotten to meet on book tour, who are now adults reconnecting, telling their stories with years of having grown up apart from their tribal nations.
So adults that were adopted out to white families or families not affiliated with any tribal nation, and then they come of age, they go to college, and then these kids or adults now are trying to reconnect and figure out. So Della, for example, is like, you know, what kinds of shoes do you wear?
Yes. She wears the wrong shoes.
Like, right, all these little details that she's trying to learn about while everyone else is being very nice and trying to help her, but sort of thinking in the back of their heads, like, I remember seeing you in the news.
Absolutely. And just because we've mentioned the shoes, like, that was one line in the book, but it's an example of just this. I feel so much tenderness for Della, because it's her first day at, like, Native student orientation. She's wearing these moccasins that I think are called, like, chickamaugas. I made it up. But they are, like, they're, like, tribally inspired moccasins that are run by, like, a white owned, like, cult in Oregon, you know. So she's trying to connect. She really wants to fit in. And this is a book about belonging. Like, that's a moment where she doesn't belong, even though she does.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, of course, she sees Steph, who's the main character, the woman who wants to become an astronaut. She wants to be the first Cherokee astronaut. And you wrote a beautiful love story between them. And it just seemed very real also, because Steph is so flawed.
She is.
Della only wants to be loved.
Yeah.
And Steph, like, can't quite do it. Tell us about their love story and what you were trying to show there.
I think everything in their love story hinges on where they are in life when they meet. Because it is a coming of age story. It's a coming of age story that follows all of these characters into their 30s. But still, in each of their phases, they're trying to understand more about themselves. For Della, you're absolutely right that she wants to be loved, but she has been loved. What she wants is to be known and loved. And she hasn't ever felt like she can have both at the same time. She comes from a religious upbringing. And so she's, again, it was important to me when portraying that custody battle to know that she was so loved by all three people involved, by the Cherokee biological father and by the white adoptive couple. Everyone loves her in some ways after the dust settled, beautiful childhood. But she knows that if she were to come out, then she could lose these people. And what a hard thing to wrestle with when you know that you've been publicly fought over for so long. So in Steph, she gets, like, kind of this alternate universe history of, like, here's someone who grew up in the same town that I would have grown up in. Here's someone who knows some of the Cherokee language that I don't know. Here's someone who has this connection, whether or not she cares about it the way I would. Like, here's someone who has everything I want and knows me in that way. Here's someone who is gay, knows that I'm gay, wants me to be gay, is okay with that, and who loves her. So Steph is like the pinnacle of belonging for Della. And Steph is someone who has just spent her whole childhood fighting to be at Hollis College, to be out of Oklahoma, to be well on her way to becoming an astronaut. So just, she's pure, pure, pure ambition, who's kind of surprised to love someone. That wasn't, like, something she really needed in college. So a lot of their relationship is about what it means when maybe you meet someone too soon, or, you know, you meet someone where you are still both trying to build yourselves. You're both trying to figure something out. Do you figure that out together, even if that means compromise, or do you give up?
Yeah. I mean, I was crushed by the way their relationship ended. I was rooting for them.
Yeah.
I thought maybe Steph, you know, Steph seems very scared of love, right? We meet her when she's being pulled out of Texas, right? We know something very bad has happened with her dad. We imagine there's some sort of abusive relationship happening there. Like, on page one, we know that. And she's just scared from that point on. And I thought maybe she found someone that she's not scared with. And then she totally messes it up.
Yeah.
She doesn't even pay attention to Della. And, you know, like, the acceptances that Della had to grad school. Oh, I was rooting for them.
It's hard. I was rooting for them, too. But it's also that I think their relationship is one of the things that the ending to their relationship is one of the things that changed so much in the revisions of this book, because the most important thing felt like be true to these two characters and where they are at this stage in life. There are people who fall in love at 18 and they are still together at 70. And it's incredible when that happens. They're really trying to find themselves, and they may or may not find that in each other.
Yeah. So Steph is at college. She's with Della. They have a beautiful love story. And in some ways, Steph has left home. But then her sister Kayla shows up at Hollis College and basically moves in with her and becomes a part of her friendship circle and everything. And her sister gets pregnant.
Yeah.
Let's talk about how Kayla is, you know, reinserts herself, right? So that Steph doesn't actually escape in any way.
Yes. Can I read the one paragraph that leads to that? Because I think it gives us some context.
Please. Yes.
Okay. All I could do was read Kayla's blog posts every day, watch her subscriber count steadily climb, and write dumb but encouraging things in the comment section like, wowza, and great art. I sent her brochures for community colleges and tribal colleges with visual art programs, and even for a four-year school, Haskell in Kansas, hoping Kayla would perk up at the Indian Nations University in its name. She was a bad student, but a good Indian. Where would that get her? Then in February, she fought with our mother, quit her job at the diner, and moved in with her least mature friend, Brittany. 2 days later, the friendship forever ruined, Kayla took 46 hours of Greyhound buses to Hollis for winter carnival. She picked the lock on the door to my room, asked to join Della on her way to swim laps, talked poor Della's ear off about the Indian Child Welfare Act, sat next to Jason Palakiko at the weekly NASI meeting, had unprotected sex with him 3 hours later, and got pregnant with his baby. Then she walked herself to the bus station, let herself into our mother's house, re-enrolled at her old high school, got her old job back, and didn't say anything to anyone for months.
Whew! That whirlwind.
That's how she gets pregnant.
And that whirlwind is Kayla in a nutshell.
Yes. Mm-hmm. She is chaos. She's very, very fun. And despite all of that mess, like, she knows who she is. She knows exactly what she's going to do after she gets pregnant.
If you're just joining us, I'm Rachel Barenbaum. You're listening to Check This Out from New Hampshire Public Radio. My guest today is Eliana Ramage, and we are talking about her brand new debut novel, To the Moon and Back. We just met Kayla again while Steph is in college, and we found out the whirlwind story in which Kayla gets pregnant. And then she has a daughter, and actually her daughter is one of my favorite characters in the whole book.
Oh, she's so fun.
She's so much fun.
Yeah.
And I loved her because she actually asks all of the questions that her mom and her aunt have been afraid to ask.
Yes.
And I actually marked this off too. She says to her mom, did you know that my grandmother was abused? And her mom says, what? How do you know? And she says, I just asked.
Yes.
I mean, right? It's so simple. And yet all these generations of women are afraid to ask those questions.
Absolutely.
That's very real.
And it means if you're afraid to ask about the past, it means you're also afraid or unable, I guess, to show up in the present moment. Because when Felicia, the niece, has that conversation with her grandmother, the way she finds out is she's like, Grandma, do you want to get ice cream? And Hannah's like, no, I'm going to my weekly support group for victims of domestic violence. And so that means that Hannah has been, you know, when we meet her much later in life, like she's in the middle of like really working through some things. And her daughters like don't even know that that's what she does with her time, is that she attends this group and has these conversations.
Right. It's like the how do you teach someone even to ask questions if they don't even know where to start? Right.
Yeah.
They want to know about their past. And Kayla is devoted to knowing about her past, but
yeah.
She can't even see that she doesn't know about her own mother's past.
She's interested in the ancestors instead of the prior generation. Some of that is, I think, Hannah in her younger years when we have the two daughters at home, Hannah was really trying to protect them from some of those memories, from some of the things that happened. But after establishing that pattern, I think the family, even as they get older, it doesn't really occur to them until there's the new generation, until there's the niece. It doesn't really occur to them that you can always like revisit the patterns of the family. You can always ask those questions, even if maybe they weren't okay to ask when you were a teenager.
Right. Steph, let's go back to her journey and her desire, dream to become an astronaut. We follow her from Hollis College. She goes to Russia. She goes to Japan. She's all over the world.
Yes.
And then finally, she becomes the coveted ASCAN, which is an astronaut candidate. And right, and her first mission, she is put into a HAB, which I guess is short for habitat, in Hawaii, where it's simulating life on Mars. Set up the situation for us, because this is insane what you do in Hawaii, right? The two sisters together on a mountain. Let's talk about it.
Okay. Sister one, Steph, the oldest, she is spending an entire year in a simulated Mars mission in a geodesic dome on a volcano in Hawaii. And that means that it's like this very, very small group of scientists who are in close quarters. They, you know, can only eat non-perishable foods. They have to communicate with the outside world on a 20-minute time delay, the way it would happen on Mars. And if they go outside, then they have to wear hazmat suits as like pretend astronaut suits. So that she's just like living this crazy life. And a big part of that is about relationships. It's about measuring for scientists, like for future crew members on Mars, what is it going to take to get this small number of people to get along with one another, just in the amount of time it would take to, you know, part of the time it would take to get to Mars. That's one sister. And sister two, Kayla, she is at that same location. She ended up marrying Jason. He's Native Hawaiian. And Kayla, Jason, and their daughter Felicia, they decided to move there. The daughter, who's Cherokee and she's Native Hawaiian, she's learning to engage with both cultures. Her mom becomes more and more and more of a public figure, of an activist. When Kayla hears that there's actually a protest, totally fictional, but there's actually a protest, you know, at this location that's protesting NASA's like placement of a dome, of an experiment, all of this stuff happening on Native land. So Kayla hears about that and she's like, that's where I want to be. So this huge like pan-Indian Native Hawaiian led protest that's an encampment and lasts for months and months. It's inspired by what happened at Standing Rock. It's inspired by how powerful and how beautiful, how incredible it is to see all of these different tribal nations and Native Hawaiians who are showing up at the same place at the same time for this like united cause of like not on our land. But what happens when like one of the sisters is in the dome and one of the sisters is outside the dome protesting her involvement?
Yeah, I mean, it's what an amazing juxtaposition there. We have the sister, Steph, living out her dream.
Yeah.
Like, she has a real shot at being an astronaut. And her sister's outside protesting. Like, it's her dream. and I just thought, wow. Like, and so how does Steph deal with it? Well, she risks everything by putting on her suit and going outside, like, sneaking out to talk to her sister.
Crazy choice.
Crazy choice. Like, after all she's worked for, at this point, she has like two PhDs, right? Her entire life is devoted to this. And she risks it all to talk to her sister, who she thinks is really in trouble, making some bad decisions.
Yeah, exactly. She feels like at that point in her life, she's getting a little older, a little less self-involved. She's realizing that there are a lot of times when she hasn't shown up for her sister. So now that her sister is like really not being helpful to her, she's still someone who might need some help, who might need an older sister to like be ready to show up for her. It's just that every time Steph visits that protest camp, she's risking throwing her whole career away.
Yeah. The main character in this book, Steph, has a lifelong dream of becoming an astronaut. And I keep coming back to this because I think this is really important. You point out in the book a couple of times that your chances of actually becoming an astronaut are basically zero. Right? Like, even though you might go around a kindergarten circle and, you know, 10 kids want to be an astronaut, the chances of anyone doing it are like 0.00001%.
Okay. The wildest thing I learned on this subject that I think is in the book, we're more likely to have triplets.
Right. Right. We're more likely to have triplets than become an astronaut. It's like an impossible dream. And yet it's her dream. That's crazy.
Yes.
So why make that the dream? And why does Steph hold on to that so hard for her entire life?
She believes in it. She really, really thinks she can do it. And I think that's, I mean, in terms of when you were talking about kindergartners going around in the circle, so many of us have these big dreams. And then someone like tells us the stats and we give up. So I think it's partly that she's just really, really, really believes in herself, which is so interesting to watch someone make so many mistakes and like not be a perfect character in so many ways, but like she believes that that she can do it. And then I think the other part is just like pure love. It's that when she decides to be an astronaut, it's not like at an older age where she's interested in I don't know, like the nitty gritty, the data, like some of the facts about other planets. It's that she's so young and she finds it in a moment of wonder and in a moment of need. So it's kind of her first love and she is devoted.
I love what you said that she believes in herself, because I think a lot of women in this book, maybe in general, but certainly in this book, don't believe in themselves that way.
Yeah.
And she does. And she works so hard. And I have to say that she was so single-minded in her pursuit of becoming an astronaut that I actually like didn't like her a lot of the time. Mm-hmm. Right? She's making these bad decisions. Like she lost Della.
Yeah.
Right? Della, the best woman in her life. She's not being great with her niece. She's not being great with her sister. You know? And so what is it like to write that character and stick with her? Right, because at the same time, I love that she believes in herself. So I want to root for her, but I don't like her.
Yeah.
So how did you feel about her and write that character?
How did I feel about her? I was, you know, I think I'm probably the most judgmental of anyone towards her. I'm really surprised on tour when people will sometimes tell me, you know, just like purely how much they love her, without the caveat of like, and I wanted to throw her, you know, across the room, but. Yeah, so I'm really judgmental of her, but it's the same thing as for space. I have so much love for her. I understand her. I've spent ages 18 to 34 with her. And the biggest thing is this is a coming of age arc. And so she doesn't have to show up all the time in the right way. She often, again, is making mistakes, but this is a hopeful book. This is a coming of age book. It's a book about finding who you are, finding your people. And so anytime she made a decision that I found really hard to abide, I just leaned into like, she is learning. She is making mistakes. There's something so beautiful and so hopeful in people, in young people, in all people, having that space to start over.
Eliana Ramage, thank you so much for joining me today on Check This Out.
Thank you. This has been such a wonderful conversation. It's just one of the best parts of having this book in the world.
Thank you. I'm Rachel Barenbaum, author of the novels A Bend in the Stars and Atomic Anna. You've been listening to Check This Out, a show where I get to do one of my favorite things in the world, talk to other writers about their brand new books. Check This Out is a partnership between New Hampshire Public Radio and the Penn Faulkner Foundation. I'll be back next week with another new author you should not miss. Our producer is Jessica Hunt. NHPR's program director is Emily Quirk. Our partner, the Penn Faulkner Foundation's mission, is to champion the breadth and power of fiction in America. The show is sponsored by CNS Wholesale Grocers Family of Companies, the podcast Totally Booked with Zibby and Zibby's Bookshop, and the Jack and Dorothy Byrne Foundation. Remember to go to your local library or bookstore and check out all the books we're talking about this season. Thanks so much for listening. Read on.